We have a great lineup here. So I'm joined today with my colleague, John Orman, expert in Express Route. I have two valuable customers of ours, Alex from NBC Universal and Jason Carson from Manulife. This is going to be a session where we're going to tell you about all the new announcements that we have made. How does that actually change how you actually deploy or architect your solutions in Azure? Like, how can you take advantage of it? What are the good practices? What are the pitfalls that you should avoid? What are some of the tips and techniques that you can do to leverage the best of what we have to offer? Instead of just us telling about that, we'll also hear from our customers who will kind of tell you, like, you know, how they've used it in their environments and what they plan to do with it, you know, in the next few months or for their future. So it should be a very valuable session for you in that aspect. So without further ado, let's get started. This is going to be the agenda. So I'm going to be talking pretty much about a recap of like what we offer to you on the cloud. You know, start with the virtual network. How do you use it today? What have you offered? What have you offered to you in the last years or so? Where are we today? And then I want to talk about advancements and announcements that we have made, right? Which is especially on the performance side. We have made a number of improvements. I'll talk about that. I'll talk about some of the newer features that's going to allow you to do like newer things, right? And then to close it out, I'll talk about how can you use these things to actually have some best practices or patterns. I'm going to talk about some of the patterns that you can actually refer to. And then you know, we'll have Alex come over. He'll talk about the experience in NBC Universal. Then John will come and do the similar to what I did, but on the Express Route side, to really, you know, do an end-to-end architecture for your data centers. And then Jason will come and talk about his experience in Manulife. Then we'll take some questions. So we have a packed agenda. So reserve your questions to the end. But if there's something that you really have to ask, it's okay. I like to have an interactive section, mostly useful for you. So do raise your hands and try to take the questions as we go on. Thank you. So what is SDN, right? This is a buzzword, right? Software-defined networking. So what are we doing in this space? How do you leverage that? Or how do we give it to you in the form that you can actually leverage the best of the SDN, right? That's going to be the first session. So we are the networking team, right? When we say that, we are not just the networking team that offers services on the cloud. We run the Microsoft network, okay? So we do everything from the VM and the NIC that you deploy on the data center, on the Azure, to all the way to how it is connected back into your on-premises, or maybe you're accessing Microsoft services from your home. The entire network path is kind of governed by our team, right? To your far left is a picture of like the physical servers that we actually have deployed in data centers. This is where your virtual machines are running, right? So we start from there. So the virtual NIC that we give to your virtual machines, right? The packet that goes in and goes out, and then all the value-added services that we provide to you in the data center, like the virtual networks, the load balancers, the firewall services, the DDoS protection, all of that is the next layer. And then connecting it back to the rest of the world, right? Before connecting the rest of the world, we first connect to the rest of the data centers. All our data centers, right? All our data centers and all Microsoft properties are connected by one network, one, AD75. So if your VM is running in any of those blue dots, let's assume, you are already connected to the Microsoft network. So from there, if you want to go to, you know, a different DC, Japan, Australia, you're in US, you are on our network, right? So that, and then the internet peering points. We also peer with the other internet peering points on from edge locations to get to other networks, multi-cloud environments, or other general public internet sites. We also peer, and we have like, you can see the numbers over there. We peer with like more than 3,500 ISPs, right? More than 100 internet exchange providers, an Express Route, which gets you privately into data centers. We have more than 35 locations, right? That's the breadth of our connectivity options that we have. And all of these is powered by software. That's where the whole SDN piece comes in. It's software-defined networks, meaning we all are routers and all that hardware devices that we have. We want to be mostly dumb, efficient, but dumb, not making a whole lot of decisions for you or us. We want to control those decisions through software, right? So the servers that you have are pretty much have software pieces, and every server has a software controller there. and it receives these instructions through the software components governing these, and they take the actions. And the hardware is efficient to route the packet out. That's how we're able to provide you the scale. There's no way that if you're doing hardware-based deployments and solutions, we wouldn't be able to provide you the scale. We wouldn't be able to build these data centers this fast. Everything is software. We can crank it up, right? That's the concept. Okay. Now, diving all the way to the far left, if you go back to this picture, right, I'm diving all the way to the far left and showing you what we have done on the cloud space, right? If my clicker works, it does. First, before I start talking, how many of you are familiar with virtual networks? Okay, I expected everybody to raise their hand. I almost got that, I guess. That's good. So this is what you do. When you come to the cloud, you start with the virtual network. This is your network, your policies, and our hardware. That's the way to think about it, right? Our hardware is huge. We carve out a logical space for you, a logical space, and give it to you as your network. This being logical can grow and shrink to your needs. You have infinite capacity at your hands, right? We create a logical VNet and give it to you. In this network, you start defining your policies. You say, this is what I want my DNS to be. This is what I want my subnets to look like. This is what I want my security firewalls to look like. This is what I want routing to happen in this particular way. All that is your control. We give you all these constructs, right? And all of it is through APIs. If you're doing all this in on-prem, you'll have to work with various different vendors and, you know, and configure it based on their manual they've given you, you know, read it. No. It's all REST APIs in the cloud, right? You say create a network, create a subnet, create a security group, create a route, create an ACL, everything is through API. Right? That's what we give. That's what a virtual network is, right? So this virtual network that you created is pretty much like a container. It's a box. Once you have it, you can deploy your services inside that, right? And if you deploy inside the virtual network, they automatically become private, meaning they have a private IP address, and all the virtual machines and services running inside this VNet can talk to each other in private IP addresses. They belong to the same network, right? Then you can get to these virtual machines from many different ways, right? Let's take the internet, the north-south path first. From the internet, you can get to these virtual machines. We provide you public IP addresses, right, that you can expose for the virtual machines. We provide you load balancing through which you can, from the internet, you can hit these virtual machines. Now, by default, we also give you the ability to go out. So if you're running virtual machines in the cloud and you want to reach out, right, you may be running your business, you may be going out to, I don't know, Google, Facebook, you're running like crawlers, or internet crawlers. So you need internet connectivity out of your virtual machines. We give you that by default. This is called as the default SNAT. Right? This is not so much in other cloud providers. You may want to make it explicit. In Microsoft Azure, we give a default SNAT for you to go out to internet. Now, if you don't want SNAT, right, you can always lock it down. And that's why we have the security groups. You can deny the default internet connection egress and say, make it a completely a back-end machine. And like I'm showing over here, you can create these different subnets, a front-end, kind of a DMZ subnet that is more open to the internet, right? You can take traffic from the internet and still go through a firewall and get it to your machines, and a back end where you can put a security group and completely lock it to only within itself. And you should also pay attention to those load balancers that I have on the top right. On the front end side, we'll give you a front end LB. This is the internet exposed LB, what we call as Azure load balancer. It can actually host public IP addresses. It can take the traffic, distribute it to your VMs underneath that, right? On the other side, on the back end also, I show you LB. You may be wondering, why on earth would I expose my back end machines to the internet, right? You don't have to. What this says is you can have a load balancing. You can still run highly available service. You can run two databases and expose that to a private IP address. This private IP address is now reachable only within that box called the VNet, right? And now let's get to the other side. The other side of connectivity is your on-premises, right? Or other VNets that you may be running, maybe a multi-cloud, multi-region deployment. You may be running a VNet in US West and a VNet in US East, in Japan, in Australia, right? You want to connect to these VNets. So the gateways connect you to the other regions or to back to your on-premises. That's what the gateways does. So we have multiple ways of connecting it, right? We have VPN gateways, we had before, and we have Express Route, which is the more all of these connect you back to the other virtual networks. This backend IP address, the internal load balancer, is exposed only in this network, inside your VNet and to your other VNets and to your on-prem, making it a corporate-facing IP address, right? So this is what we have done so far, right? And the last part I want to cover here is, you may be also, consuming other PaaS services in Azure, right? Azure SQL, Azure SQL DB, or Azure Storage. So when you try to connect to these from virtual network, you'll have to go to the public IP address because those are not running inside your VNet. They're running outside your VNet, but the traffic stays within our network. Like I told you, everything in Microsoft is in one network. So if you're reaching to, I don't know, Redis Cache, or if you're reaching to Azure SQL or Azure Storage, the traffic completely lies within our network space, Microsoft network space. That's what I wanted to say. This is what we had so far, right? Let's see what we are improving, how we are improving in these, right? Another thing that I want to show you, we talked about logical stuff, right? But if you're thinking, we're wondering, like, physically, how does it happen physically, right? And I tried a very simplified diagram of our physical networking, right? It's more complex than this. But just to show you a understanding of the physical, how it's laid out, take a particular region, right? We have racks and racks and racks of servers. The dotted, that's why I have the dots. We are always expanding. We are always adding more capacity to the region. So we have a lot of racks and racks of server. We cut across a logical isolation for your VNet. This is your VNet. So once you deploy your VMs, it's sitting on one of these servers in one of these racks. And the connectivity within them is direct. So within the region, we have a common network infrastructure on top of these racks, right, that connects you. So within a few milliseconds, I think it's from 2 to 10 milliseconds or 5 to 10 milliseconds, you should be able to reach any other VM on your VNet, right? And when you're going out of these networks, you're either using an 8075 network to go to other regions, right? Or you're using the internet peering that we have to go to internet. That's basically it. This is physically how it is deployed. Now, for the improvement. We are doing fleet level upgrade for performance that's going to give you 33 to 50% increase on average for all the throughput that you can get between the VMs. Today, if you're getting like depending upon the VM size, you're getting different throughput numbers, right? Like all the way from 400 Mbps to 7 Gbps, you're getting different throughput based on the VM size. All these numbers are going to increase 33 to 50%. And you don't have to do anything. It's free. We are doing like upgrades on basically offloading abilities on our hardware that's going to give you these benefits. And these changes will roll out by the end of the year. And at the end of the year, we'll actually publish those numbers and guidelines in Azure.com that on the VM size, you can also see the expected network throughput that you can get for that within the VNet. Right? Now, the exciting new announcement, if you have missed, I hope you have not missed. How many of you have heard about accelerated networking this week? Oh, that's a lot less than I expected. So let me tell you a little bit about this. So this week, we launched what effectively is the fastest NIC on public cloud, period. Fastest NIC on the public cloud that is there today, right? So we use a technology called SRIOV, single root IO virtualization, and FPGAs, field programmable gateway arrays. That's the real technology behind this. Basically, what it summarizes is we're using the hardware to accelerate the connectivity between VMs. So all the policies that was there that was running on the host, we used to have a host agent. So the policies are updated software, I told you, right? But sometimes we need to use our friendly hardware, right? So what we did was we offloaded these policies to the hardware, right? And which means that if you see the picture on the right-hand side, it bypasses the virtual switch that we have on the host machine. So giving you direct connectivity from one VM to the other VM. You know the result of this? 10x improvement on latency. 10x. In fact, maybe more than that. We're going to give you 25 to 50 microseconds. Within your virtual network, 25 to 50 microseconds. You can't beat it. There's nothing else like this, right? And from a throughput standpoint, up to 25 Gbps. Go look it up. Competitors don't offer more than 9 Gbps max. You're going to have like 25 Gbps of throughput possible within a virtual network. That's what we're introducing right now. So if you really have latency-sensitive application, I know a bunch of in Microsoft internal properties that's going to benefit from this. where they want to get to the database really, really fast, right? All the dynamic ERP applications, they're dying for this, right? They're going to get this. SQL, they're going to use this. So all these people, they get the ultra-low latency, right? It's almost, database is right inside the machine for you, almost, right? Microseconds, you'll be able to get to it. So take a note of this, go back and think about where you can use this. It's available only in certain VM SKUs now, and we will expand it in the future, right? And only available in preview mode in some regions now. All that, you know, it's just a matter of time before we make it GA, we make it available for more VM SKUs, we roll it out for Linux. All that is there, but it's available for you right now to test. The next thing I want to tell you before I go to the peering part, I told you in the first screen, what we do today is gateways, right? If you want to talk between VNets, you have to use the gateways. Now, these VNets can also be in different regions. Even then, you can use the gateways. That's what we actually do. So what happens is every VNet gets a gateway, and when they want to talk to the other VNet, the traffic comes to the gateway. This gateway hands the traffic to the other gateway, and the traffic flows to the other virtual machine. This is what we have today. It's great. It works cross-region. But the new announcement is VNet peering. VNet peering is GA. Now, you see how the diagram has changed? There is no gateways in the path anymore. This works only within a region, right? Right now, it only works within a region, but we removed the gateway. And we allow full mesh connectivity, full. So how do we do this? The gateways were there for a reason, right? It was trying to bridge between the networks. But since both VNets are in the same region, we understand, we open up the infrastructure to trust one VNet with the other. So you'll have to go through portal or PowerShell or your APIs to kind of establish this link from both sides. If you have privileges, you'll start a link. You'll say, like, I want to peer to the VNet 2. If you're a VNet 1 owner, you'll say, I want to peer to the VNet 2. The owner of VNet 2 will say the same, right? And if you guys both agree, we will make a note of that and say, okay, you both are peered, right? Of course, we require these VNets to have non-overlapping IP space, correct? And we require these VNets to be in the same region, but that's pretty much it. It works cross-subscription. Can be different subscriptions, right? And they just are peered, and they can totally talk to each other on private networks. So in this diagram, the VMs on the top can access the SQL machines on the bottom. I haven't drawn the line there because it looked ugly when I drew that on the graphics, so I left it out. But just wanted to make sure that, you know, understand that it's full mesh. Anyone in the VNet can talk to anyone else on the other VNet. No gateways, no single point of connectivity in between, direct. Which means everything I said in the previous slide applies. 25 to 50 microsecond latency between VNets now. You can get that, right? You can get up to 25 Gbps of throughput across VNets. You can get that too. So whatever I said in the previous slide applies for this. Because for all connectivity purposes, these two VNets are a single VNet now. Okay. How do you actually use it? One of the use cases, right? How many people still use classic deployment models, classic VNets? I know, Chris, you use that because you're testing it. But anybody else? No. Actually, that is good, actually, in a sense that, like, you are all moving to the ARM. But if you do have classic deployment model, you have, like, classic VNets, and now you're exploring the ARM VNets, resource manager-based VNets, you can use peering to connect them to make it look like a single network, right? That's also going to be a very useful feature for you because, you know, it's going to look seamless. It's going to look like a single VNet. This works for that. The real use case that we were promoting, and this is actually part of one of my recommendations, is to use hub and spoke. If you have more than one VNet in a region, and we know why you do that many, many times, and the customers will tell you why they're doing it, right? Then you can actually use one VNet to be the hub VNet, where you can consolidate all your shared services, your gateways, your virtual appliances, right? Anything that you can share across VNets, you put it in the one place called the hub VNet. The other VNets that you have, peer it to this hub VNet. Now, everybody else can enjoy these services because transit works. So you can have the NVA on the hub, and from the peer VNet, you can transit to the hub VNet, use that NVA service, go out, or wherever the NVA takes you. So what it really allows you is, there could be a VNet with no gateways in them, so it's probably not connectable to on-premises before. Now it can. You don't need a gateway. You just enable transit. This VNet can go to the hub VNet, use that gateway path, go out to on-prem. That's huge. So what does it mean to you? Why should you be looking into it? Number one is ease of management. So you have your gateways and everything else that you buy from other vendors in one place. That's where you manage them, right? Ease of management. Number two, cost savings. You don't have to put gateways and NVAs in all the VNets. You put it in one place. Now maybe it allows you to go for the premium SKUs of those what they're offering now, right? Because you're only paying that for once. You get the best, put it in the hub VNet, use it from the rest, right? That's what this allows you. This is really, really something that you can actually use to re-architect how your deployments look like. And I'll cover this as part of one of the best practices. Now let's look more into the virtual machine, because I really want you to know some of the improvements that we are making on a VM level that you should probably think about and take advantage of. A quick recap. What do we offer today? Of any virtual machine in Azure, you need a virtual NIC, right? If you don't specify one, the platform creates one for you. Maybe you haven't noticed it. But you can create a NIC. The NIC is, in my words, that's what gives life to the VM, right? Otherwise, the VM is there. Nobody can talk to it, connect to it. You create a NIC, and then you connect to that VM, right? When you create a NIC, what we actually give you is a private IP address. Every NIC needs to have one private IP address. Now, optionally, you can add a public IP to this NIC. You can also expose this NIC to the internet by adding a public IP address. It can be dynamic or static, right? Although also optionally, you can expose this behind a load balancer configuration. You can create a load balancer, and you can point this NIC to the load balancer. So there's two ways for you to come from the internet. One is direct path using a public IP on the NIC, or you come to the load balancer take you to the NIC, right? And load balancer probably can take you to multiple NICs. So it could be one of the backends in the load balancer, or you can have a NAT rule to come straight from LB to the NIC. This is what we have offered you, right? The primary, and you can have multiple NICs, by the way, right? You know that you can have multiple NICs for a VM based on the VM sizes. And the primary NIC so far has some special abilities. So you can only do load balancing or public IP address only on the primary NIC. The secondary NIC was purely a backend NIC. All you could do there was provide IP address from the VNet, and you can only talk within the VNet. That is what we have so far. Now let's see what's changing and what are the new stuff that's coming in this. First, okay, is MAC persistence, okay? So far, we don't persist MACs across stop and reboot, right? You have a virtual machine, you have a MAC assigned to the NIC of it, you stop it, meaning you deallocate it, you go for the weekend, come back on Monday, you restart it, it's got a different MAC. Many of you may say, so what, right? I'm still able to connect to it, it works fine. If that's the case, great. But for some of you in this crowd, you want the MAC to be the same. Why? Because you want the MAC to be the same, okay. You're saying, yeah, I want it. That's because you use this for licensing sometimes, right? The licensing servers recognize your VMs through the MAC address, right? You want the MAC to be the same. So that's one reason. Reason number two, some of the services running on this VM may look at your MAC to identify which NIC that they should associate themselves to, right? When the MAC changes, your NIC name changes. So there's a side effect of it. Oh, now the service says, oh, I don't know which NIC anymore. Oh, I'm seeing new NICs. So it may go and associate itself with a secondary NIC. And that may have issues because, like I showed you in the last slide, the secondary NIC is not as special as the primary NIC. That is why you want the MAC to be persistent, right? This is what we do now. You stop it, right? The VM, I'm just doing a gray because it's not even available in the platform anymore. You bring it back, the same MAC on all NICs. If NIC 1 had MAC 1, NIC 1 is going to have MAC 1. NIC 2 had MAC 2, it's going to have MAC 2. GA, it's available to everyone. You don't have to do anything to take advantage of this. We rolled it out, enabled for all of you. So that's what you'll get. Okay. First, second, this is very interesting to me, very close to my heart. It's a preview feature. I think in the last session, Jigar kind of mentioned this as well. So what we're doing is we are making the secondary NICs almost parity to the primary NIC. So if you remember the picture, the secondary NIC could only have private IP addresses. Now I'm saying, no, give it public IP address as well. You can put a public IP in the secondary NIC or even a load balancer secondary NIC. This opens up new scenarios, right? I'm just capturing a very generic use case on the picture over here. Every VM that is shown over here can have two NICs. One that you can use for external load balancing, maybe you could come from outside, right? And the other you can use for internal load balancing to talk to your internal network. So the single set of VMs can now expose two NICs and be part of two different LB configs. Huge. This opens up a lot of virtual appliance scenarios, right? And you will hear from our virtual appliance partners how they're utilizing this and offering you new services, right? That's one. Then also, I'm going to give multiple public and private IPs to each NIC. As if the previous one was not enough, we're taking it to the next step, right? A single, you can even have a single NIC, a VM with one NIC, having multiple public IPs on it, multiple private IPs on it. This opens up new scenarios. Now you can run multiple different services using single NIC VMs, right? You can have like 10 different SSL websites, right, on different public IPs coming back to the same VM. And they, you can map it back to 443 again on different private IP addresses. So you can have one public IP, private IP pairing, right? That's, again, very, very useful. This is in preview. In fact, it'll be in preview starting next week. We are a little bit pre-announcing this. And you'll have to, it's a managed preview. You need to ask for it. We'll whitelist you, and you can play with it, right? And we'll roll it out for all regions. It'll be GA, and you can use it. One more thing that we are also very interested in announcing is the multiple WIPs for load balancers, right? Just look at that one picture. How many people use SQL Always On today? We use SQL servers. A whole lot of you. You should look at this then. It's going to be a useful feature for all of you. Today, you have like three VMs, right? And you can only run one availability group on them because we only allow one load balanced IP address or one private load balanced IP address on it. We are changing that. We are allowing you to use multiple LBs on the same set of VMs. That's going to allow you to do exactly what is shown in the picture. You have two or three SQL VMs, and you can actually have multiple availability group listeners on them, right? Each of the listeners is going to have their own private IP address, all 1433. Different private IPs, 1433, you get one availability group. Different WIP, 1433, different availability group, right? This is GA. This is available everywhere. SQL team has released an article for guidance on how you can set it up. So I will provide that links, right? And you can just go read about it and use it. This is in GA right now. Okay. In the interest of time, this is something that I want to talk about, and maybe if I have time, it looks like I might. I'll show you a quick demo of doing this, right? How many people today are scratching their heads with, I can't connect to my VM. I don't know what's happening, right? Yeah? Do you need help, more help to figure out, like, you know, troubleshoot and self-help by yourself? This is what we're actually doing, right? We're actually doing a lot of enhancements for your troubleshooting so that you can troubleshoot by yourself and you can figure out and know why you're not able to do something. Maybe it's because of a configuration that you're not able to do it, and we want you to find out by yourselves, right? So we're actually announcing what is called as effective security rules, right? So if you go into a VM, and if you go into the NIC of that VM, there's a small UI right now in portal that says effective security rules. Once you click that, it's going to show you all security rules as it applies on the NIC. So what we are doing here is, this is not an API return call for you. We go all the way to the physical virtual machine. We query the agent there to tell us what active rules are actually applying on the NIC. We get it back and show it to you, right? So we're going to show you both. If you have, let's say, a subnet-based rule and a NIC-based rule, you will see both right there, right? And similarly, if you're wondering, like, where my packet is going, right? Now, where is it going to? We also show you effective routes. Same concept. We're going to go all the way to the physical machine, get the routes that is configured over there, come back and show it to you right there on portal. Okay? Let me see if I can show you a quick demo in 5 minutes on this. So here I created a VM, pre-created it, a front-end VM, right? I'm trying to connect to it. It has a public IP address, so I want to connect to it if it loads. So here it is, right? I want to connect to it. Okay, open, connect. I cannot connect to it. Something is going on, right? I want to know more. Why am I not able to connect to this thing? Okay, I'm going to cancel it. All right, and then come back here. Diagnose and solve problems. That's how I would naturally go, right? Okay. So I can connect to my Windows VM. It happens to be a Windows VM. So have we gone through these steps before? It's pretty useful, right? They give you really, really good tips over here to actually debug. One thing it says is you can review the VM's console screenshot, right? So if you click on that, on the right, we're showing you that the VM is up and running. So you know that in the data center, your VM is up and running. So it's not that the VM is shut down. So first check. Second check they're saying is like you can use this PowerShell or CLI to actually reboot or reset the configurations for connectivity inside the OS itself. You know that every OS you need to allow for RDP connections. So this is giving you a tip to reset those connections to see whether that actually helps. But we're not going to do that today. We have other interesting things to do. You can also do a soft reboot of this VM. That is step number three. Now, step number four is about effective routes, right? To see if we have routes correctly configured for this thing. Let's see if we have effective routes correctly configured, right? Now, this is taking a few seconds here, like 5 seconds or so, because it's going to the VM, right, on the host where the VM is running. It's fetching all the routes from there and showing you what routes you have. These are the routes. So this is like if you're able to get to the VM, but the VM is not able to get the packet out of it. The egress routes is what you're seeing. Well, we see that the next stop address, if it's 0.0.0.0, which is where you will now belong because you're on the internet, the next stop is internet. So there is an active route. There is an active route that should let you connect from internet. So the route seems fine. Okay. Let's go to the next step, which is security rules. So I'm going to see if security rules, if that's fine or not. So it's going to again take like, you know, the maximum of 5 to 10 seconds. And now it's going to show you all the security rules as configured on the host machine for this VM. Okay, I see here. Hey, yeah, default allow RDP is there. It's a priority 1000. It says allow, right? It should allow it, right? 3389 should allow it. Security rule seems to be correct. But hold on. There is a subnet level security group also that is in play. Because this could be what your network admin has set for you, right? So usually the subnet rules are set by the admin, the VM rules are set by you as developers. Let's look at that. There's none. There's only default rules. There is no rule allowing 3389. That's why this is blocked, right? Actually, now I want to go ahead and add one, right? Let me see if I can click on this. Click on the FE subnet, which is the NHC for the subnet, and I'm going to say add a security rule. Inbound security rule, add. Okay. I'm going to say pick the service, RDP. Okay. Give it a name. Allow RDP. Okay. Right now it's okay. Let's say okay. Let's see if it takes effect and see if it actually shows us. Take a few seconds. It's got to finish doing it. It'll come back and tell us when it is done. Yep, successfully done it. Okay, let's go back. Okay, let's go back here. Now we need to make sure that we can see it here as well, right? So that we know for sure the rule has taken effect. Again, this is where from the API, this rule is now being sent to the physical host machine. This is all software. Like I told you, I did this using APIs, I just created the port, right? And this is now being distributed to all the VMs, wherever it has to go to, and it is there. It's not there yet. Just give it a few minutes, a few seconds maybe, and it should be there. And once it is there, we can actually go and see if we're able to connect to it, right? And this is the power of software-defined networking, which is if you had, let's say, 1,000 VMs behind the subnet, it'll go to all 1,000 machines. If you had 1,000, I'm telling you again, if you have 1,000 VMs, behind this subnet, I add the RDP rule, it will go to all 1,000 VMs. That's what we take care of, right? We go and distribute it everywhere. Now we see it here. The subnet rule says allow RDP, added already, right? Let's go back and try to connect these. Just to close out, I like to keep this clean. I don't want stuff hanging out. Let me go back to my VM. Let's try to connect to it. Okay. Open, connect, there you go. I can go into the VM if you don't trust me, but you know, once you get to this screen, you know, from networking guys, we are good. If it doesn't work after this, that's your app. That's what we typically say. We got network connectivity, right? So let's go back. I'll wrap it up with giving you some practice and recommendations. One thing, I'm just going to give you two best practice or templates, right? Like, and John will actually take you through more of these things. what the way I like to look at it is, like, if you have multiple regions, if you're able to get all services in a region to be in a single VNet, do it. Get one VNet, go and create how many of your subnets you want, one for DMZ, one for your backend, one for your applications, one for management, one to host your NVAs, one to host your shared services. Do it. Subnetize that. Define security rules for each of it. Define different routing rules for each of it, but have a single VNet. The advantage of that is you can just have a single gateway, connect it back to ER or whatever, connect it back to your on-premises, done. Less management for you. All you have to worry about is single VNet and maintain it. This is one way. But if you want, the new way is this. If you have to create multiple VNets because you want to give one subscription per department or there are too many people here, they all want to create their own VNet, have management level isolation, do that, right? Create one hub VNet, right? Put all your NVAs, your shared services over there. Maybe get an ultra-perf gateway on that, right? And then connect all these VNets back to this hub VNet through peering. This effectively kind of creates a single VNet for all network connectivity purposes. Like I told you, this is like a single VNet now. It's direct, straight, full mesh connectivity, no extra latency. So you get the benefit of the previous one. Now you can actually manage your subscription separately, and that gives you the pretty much where you are with the previous scenario. Connect it back to ER, connect it back to other regions from this hub VNet. So if you have like a multi-cloud, multi-region deployment, each region has a hub VNet. You can connect all these hubs. You can create a global network, all on private IPs. Possible to you in Azure. So that's end of my recommendations. I'm going to call upon Alex from NBC Universal to talk about the experiences in NBC. Let's hear from him. Thank you.
There, got it? Okay, got it. So good morning again, everybody. Last day of Ignite. Hopefully you guys are pumped. Got some good information still on this Friday morning. The goal here is to give you guys a little bit of the insight as to the journey that NBC Universal took, specifically within the platform engineering group, because we said, hey, there's this cool product, cool technology called Azure. We hear it does cool things, but what is that gonna do to our business? So within my role, of this cool company, I'm the strategy guy. I talk about what the business value is for using what Narayan just talked about, to our customers, right? To the people making films, to the people making the TV content, to the people making the cable content, and our parks. What does that mean to them, right? Because they don't care about VNet peering, to be quite honest with you, right? They just care about making their money and that the tools, the platforms underneath it, enable them to make their money. So that's my role within this platform engineering organization. So early on in this year, last year, we went to our vice president and we said, hey, look, it is no longer acceptable for VMs to be provisioned in weeks. I said, well, how long does it really take us? Oh, about a month or so to get an environment, right? You guys should all be dying right about now, right? There's no way it's gonna take weeks to get environments. And possibly some of you in here right now are probably still going through that same process right now. We still have a little bit of that within our organization. So we said, let's look at this Azure thing because we hear it spins up VMs really quickly and we can get environments and we can get our customers off our back. So that's my role within the organization. So this cool organization, as you guys probably all know, NBC Universal has the news portions. I think you guys are all familiar with that. We make the movies. I think there's going to be some minions walking through the door here shortly. And dang, it didn't come through. So we make the movies. Our parent company there, Comcast. You guys ever been to Universal Studios Hollywood or Orlando? Cool parks. I'm based out of the Hollywood one there. So I just walk around, jump on the rides whenever I want. Look at the celebrities. Hey, Angelina, how you doing? They're like, hey, Alex. I'm like, hey, look for Azure. And they say, okay. Our parent company, Comcast, as you guys know, the largest cable provider. Comcast purchased NBC Universal, and I just want to give you this so you guys get a little bit of a context as who we are. It was NBC, the broadcast, and then Universal who made the movies, brought us together now with this purple logo there with NBC Universal. Okay, coming off Rio, right, a huge success for the Azure team and Microsoft in conjunction as well. Did record 3.3 billion total streaming minutes. I think you guys know the gentleman in the middle and the lady to the right there. Made our country proud and all of us here within it by winning all these gold. So some of the data behind the Azure work that happened was 2.7 billion minutes of Olympic coverage. It's quite a bit. I don't know if you guys were able to tell, but for those of you who are up at night, I mean, we were doing streaming pretty much on a 24-hour cycle. I mean, you can get whatever you were looking for the Olympics, powered by Azure. We had over 1 million unique users, and simultaneously broadcasting or streaming 550 Olympic events. It's good stuff there. All right, within the NBC Universal organization, this was huge. Like our CEO was talking about it all the time and how sports organization really, really delivered on their golden promises. Okay, so that's enough about NBC Universal. Let's talk about really why I'm here to talk to you guys about it. And the message I want to give to you guys, as I alluded to a little bit earlier, was the growing pains and how we got to this point of VNet peering. But wait, Alex, you guys make movies and cable stuff. What do you care about VNet peering? I'll get there in just a second. So what we did is, later in the year, in 15, we said, okay, let's talk about Azure. Does it make sense to go there? And we went through this ABC boxes here. We said, let's talk about the value. How do we realize it? Conducted a couple of POCs. Then obviously we went to the next phases, which are planning. Within our organization, we have the people, for example, the parks, right, who put on the Halloween Horror Nights or who put on the Transformers, right, all that good stuff. They're the actual business. We've got a layer that sits in between those folks, the business, and then our engineering group. They're called business technology groups there. And what they said is, look, we need to be more agile, we need to get to market faster, we need to be scalable, and you guys need to help us create some new models here, some new business stuff here. So we said, okay, we're techies, we're engineers, we got this stuff. So we, as an technology organization, the back-end shared services said, we need to be more adaptive. We need to bring this thing called DevOps. I think everybody here is familiar with the word DevOps, and it varies from definition to definition. But what it really means is we need to create a process for which to deliver to these business technology groups better service. Right? We want these folks to come to us and say, hey, I got a business problem, and how am I going to solve it? So again, that's relevant because when we created the strategy, we said, here's this Azure product. It can make it go faster. All right, we're going to be stars, and everybody's going to be high-fiving, bonuses all the way around. Alex gets a new Lamborghini. Yeah. All right, party on. Well, not necessarily. So we started looking at this thing called Azure again, right? Here was like, we're going to make this thing go faster. Okay, how does this thing work? And earlier in the conversation, I told you guys about our growing pains, and we're very immature when it came to this Azure product, but we thought we were going to use it and immediately start reaping benefits. And then we figured out quickly, like, oh, it's you just can't log into the portal and you know start spinning up VMs and environments to give this to these customers. There is a lot of thought that we've got to put into it so that our own infrastructure teams can still adhere to the policies of the organization. Number one, probably you guys already are thinking about security, right? Our security guys are saying, there's just no way you're going to spin something up there and then not be able to see the traffic that's coming in, and there's no way you're going to put something up there that I don't know how to audit it. That's just not going to happen, right? We said, no, but we just go to Azure and then, like, through the interface, and we just launch some VMs. Really, it's that easy. They said, no, go do your homework. So we immediately started to see that this is going to take some thought. This is going to take some serious conversations that need to happen within the organization. So, boom, that's our introduction to Azure and how we need to mature immediately, right? Some of you may be going through this process right now, but again, I wanted to give you guys a sense of you're not alone, and here's how we started going through this process. First thing we did, we brought all our organization together from an infrastructure perspective, the network folk, the security folk, our GRC people, all people who need to be part of a conversation of getting data up into Azure, brought them together, and we said, we plan on doing this, and everybody said, you need to think about this, and that. That's the service broker part, right? We need to start thinking, okay, how are we going to present this back to our customers? So what we found out is we needed to come up with a design that was going to be useful for both really sensitive data and then the stuff we can put up in the cloud, right? I think you guys know what I'm talking about. Here's a hybrid model. So we said public cloud and then private cloud. The design we ultimately came up with was what you're seeing here. So we've got a public cloud, and we've segmented out our business units respective to the public cloud. Right, we got our film, I think everybody knows about, the parks business everybody knows about, and a number of other business units as well. The important one there I want to call out is the shared services part, because in fact that is where we did all of our common services. We put our security in there, put our AD in there, because security said I need to be able to control the flow of data into a public cloud. So we said, okay, great. We've got this design. This is how it's going to work. Alex is still going to get his Lamborghini. We can just start deploying this stuff, right? Woohoo! Oh, what about private? We're just going to replicate it. Okay, that still works. So then we got to this point of, okay, we're starting to figure this out. We can now crawl. Right? We can do this stuff here. And as we're going through our design, we started saying, okay, we're putting these business units, these ones that I just depicted here. What happens when one of them gets breached? What happens if we want to share data with another business unit? Mr. CTO came and said, I need you guys to make sure we've got a level of protection from each other and from each business unit. And I need for you guys to understand that sometimes they may communicate. Like, kind of making it hard for us, boss. He said, your job, you guys figure it out. So in this design, we had to take all that into consideration, and that brings us to the crawl part. It took the people, the process, the technology. And we said, given that all these things are going on, we really don't know what the heck we're doing, so we called up Microsoft. We say, hey, look, it's not just about going to the interface and spinning up these environments anymore. It's really about getting in there and figuring out these designs and having the conversations with an entire group. And I keep harping on this, and please, please, please keep this in mind when you guys are going through your journeys as well. It's got to add the business value, right? Your customers have got to be part of that discussion as well, because it makes no sense for you guys to stand up the state-of-the-art platform if they are not going to get any type of business value out of it. So while we're having these discussions with our infrastructure teams, you bring in the businesses as well, people. That is a lesson learned for us, because as an engineering shop and techies and geekies that we are, we were in a hole and wanted to do our engineering. So please, please, please keep that in mind. So after we got through the crawl part, we went to the walk, we said, okay, we figured it out a little bit more. Now we understand how this design's gonna work. We've had a bunch of sessions with our security team. After we get to the walk part and we figure that part out, we'll then go to the optimization, right? Once we start to figure this thing out here. So here's what our subscription looks like after we did a whole bunch of talking. NBCU as a tenant, we got our business units, our accounts, the shared services part, which is really important. And again, this is where we put the ID, the security stuff, all your common services. And then we've got these regions that we are going to use. Right now we got US West. We're running on this thing called Express Route. Anybody heard of it? Yeah? We had to do that. We learned that, by the way. We couldn't just bring up the browser and, you know, just go on to Azure. They're like, no. You got to do this thing called Express Route. So there I am building out an Express Route. We don't have East, Central, or Europe yet. Though we plan on it. Right now, we just got the same connectivity into the West Coast. We'll do the East Coast next year, and we're planning on leveraging some of that for DR as well. So this is the cream of the crop right here, right? And this is what I really wanted to give to you guys. I took you through the experience of the heartache that we had going through how do we bring this Azure thing up. Yes, sir.
With
Yes, we did. So we got a couple of gentlemen there within our organization that did look into ARM provisioning as well. We'll talk about that in a little bit, please, here. So once we got this description going on, we figured out quickly that, hey, in order to make this thing happen, in order to make these things communicate, we're gonna need a whole bunch of firewalls and a whole bunch of load balancers. And guess what that did to our cost? Boom, shot it way up. Now, we went back to our CTO and he said, this is gonna cost what? I'm gonna keep this on-prem, are you kidding me? There's no way we're gonna do this and we plan on giving that money back to, or giving our customers the bill? Are you guys kidding me? So Alex's Lamborghini was like, oh man, it's just kind of a fading memory. The point I'm trying to make here is, once we get past the VNet conversation and we were able to use, or we are gonna be able to use the VNet peering, that's gonna drop our count of firewalls and load balancers. So we're gonna go from 54 to 4. Huge cost savings. Now it's gonna start to make more sense to our CTO and more CFOs. So what I wanna leave you with this slide is, make sure you take advantage of the VNet peering. So in summary, we thought we were pretty cool. We are pretty cool, I think, because we make business movies and broadcast stuff and parks and Olympics and all that cool stuff. But we had to go through this journey of figuring it out and going through the heartache and then giving the right people a call to make sure the technology is in place and having the difficult conversations with an entire team and then our customers as well. So we went through ABC to introduce the agility, to be more scalable, to be cheaper. Make sure you guys take this in a phased approach, right? Don't just run out there and start doing environments because you think it's cool like we initially thought. Figure out how you're gonna crawl, walk, and then run. And with that said, that's it.
So it's always interesting. Our internal IT department at Microsoft went through a very similar journey. We have a very similar structure without the amusement parks or minions. So I want to talk a little bit about ExpressRoute. So I was facing away from the crowd. So how many folks are familiar with ExpressRoute? Good. How many people actually have ExpressRoute deployed? Cool. All right. So you'll be able to follow along. I'm really going to cover a little bit about some of the announcements that we made this week, but more around some best practices and some kind of niche scenarios that you may want to know about given your specific scenarios at your company. So ExpressRoute, just to refresh everybody, is a private connection using a service provider's network and Microsoft's network. So your traffic does not go across the internet to get to your private network, public Azure endpoints, or Office 365. Underneath the covers, it is a very resilient connection. So if you order a 1 gigabit ExpressRoute circuit, under the covers, there's actually 2 physical paths that are being constructed for you. So if you order a 1 gig, you're actually got 2 under the covers. So if one side fails, you still have the full bandwidth. So it's a very resilient connection. Now, as you can see, we connect to those 3 different clouds inside Microsoft's Intelligent Cloud, Azure, Office 365, and your private network. So when we think about, I jumped ahead one slide. I want to talk about the announcements for this year first. We announced an ultra performance gateway. This will become key when I talk about the virtual data center, which Alex touched on just a little bit. That will get us up to 10 gigabits of connectivity through a single virtual network gateway. Our SLA also went up from 3 nines to 3.5 nines. And we've also improved some monitoring and troubleshooting tools on the portal to let you see route and ARP summaries for your ExpressRoute peerings for each of the peering sets. So talking about the 3 different clouds, when you think about security, the Microsoft peering and the Azure public peering, those are public networks. So they're not on the internet per se, but they are public addresses. So you want to land those in your organization, even though it's coming across ExpressRoute on a private network, you still want to land them in some sort of a DMZ or give them a firewall or some sort of security policy before you just let it run into your corporate network. So those 2 boundaries, make sure that you've got those in some sort of a security policy boundary. With private peering, that is as isolated as you want to make it. By default, that virtual network in Azure is isolated. So inbound internet traffic can't get to it unless you open it up. As a result, that back-end connectivity is private. It is your network. So at that point, it depends on your stance on security that internally, for instance, Microsoft, we just allow that traffic in and it doesn't go through firewalls. Your policies may be different, but that is more of a secured channel because it is isolated to just you and whatever you open on the internet edge of the virtual network in Azure, whereas the other two, like I said, are a shared network, so you want to lock those down. One comment on disaster recovery. So as I said, the express route circuit is resilient in a location. So you've got two physical circuits. We've done a lot of work to eliminate all single points of failure down to the fact that we have an A and a B router for each express route circuit. The fiber in the colo facility don't cross. They don't run in the same trays in the overhead. So if some tech is swinging ladders around and busts the 100 cables, the one side or the other will be up for that resiliency. But if the entire site goes down, if there's a fiber cut with your service provider getting to the site, things like that where the entire location goes down, for disaster recovery, for the geo-replication type scenarios, we recommend a second express route circuit. So if you have to have disaster recovery for your express route, that's done with another circuit in a different location, obviously. So the gateways have the ability to be connected to multiple express route circuits, and an express route circuit can be connected to multiple gateways. So as in the diagram here, you could actually do a mesh. And in this case, I'm protected against an Azure region failure, and I'm also protected against an express route location failure. So with this mesh, my traffic can route either, either direction based on anything that fails. This works based on your carrier's network. If you have MPLS or if you run your own Ethernet backbone, this holds true for both of those scenarios. Now, if you do run your own Ethernet network, or you're responsible for your layer 3, and some MPLS providers give you some routing ability, you can play with multipath and actually start to direct where traffic goes across your network. So in this case, I've got, let's focus on the West gateway up in Azure. He's connected to two express route circuits, and we've got an office in Los Angeles and an office in New York. The LA office is 10.1, New York is 10.2. From each branch office, I'm going to, or data center or whatever that location is, I'm going to broadcast up the entire address space for my company. Now, LA is going to send up LA's route and New York's route, but you'll notice that I've prepended my AS number a second time for the non-local route. In New York, I've done the same thing, except I've added that extra prepend to the LA routes. So BGP is flowing here, so those routes all get propagated up to my gateways. And so what the West Gateway sees is four routes, two for LA and two for New York. And what that gateway is going to do is look at that AS path and choose the shortest path, and it will send traffic down that route. Now, what you can do is, in, say, New York, if I wanted everything to go through LA and I wanted to use my corporate backbone, I could put the prepend the other way so that I always prefer one express route tunnel to the other. So you have the ability here to use our backbone to do that cross-nation traffic or your own backbone for the cross-nation traffic. Depending on your specific scenarios, you can engineer it however you need to. For the reverse path, to have your network locally pin to one region or another, you can use local preference to go back up. Now again, if you're an MPLS customer, you may be somewhat limited because MPLS will aggregate routes and take some of this control away from you. Depending on your provider, they will give you some ability to adjust that in some cases. But if you run an Ethernet and do your own layer 3, you can do all of this stuff. So let's look at a scenario. If I've got a server in West and it's going to a machine in my LA data center and it's 10.1.1.1, the gateway is going to say, oh, say I see 10.1.1.1 in two different routes. The shortest path is coming from LA. I'm going to route it down that direction. But let's say that service provider has a fiber cut, whatever it is, and your circuit to LA dies. Well, what happens? BGP then stops sending those routes up to the gateway. Well, now the gateway only sees two routes, but one of them is still the LA route. So it will now route that traffic to the express route circuit in New York, and then your backbone will take it back to LA. Suboptimal routing, but you're still up. So this is how you can do disaster recovery and multipath with ExpressRoute. Changing topics completely. Another feature of ExpressRoute is forced tunneling. So depending on your security and risk management teams, they may say, we need to inspect not only the inbound traffic, but outbound traffic too. And in fact, while you're at it, we want to just see everything. So I want you to pull everything in Azure back to on-prem. So in that example before, if that server out in the cloud wanted to go to CNN.com, it would actually be forced back down to my on-premise and then go up my on-premise internet path. This is sometimes done if you have esoteric security devices or things that can't be virtualized, or you've just got a really anal security team. Sorry, security guys. But by broadcasting 0/0, basically saying any IP address, I don't care if it's internet, local, whatever, send it back down to on-prem, right? That's what forced tunneling is. Now, by default, your virtual network allows outbound traffic. So as long as that 0/0 is there, it's going to stuff everything back down to on-prem. But what happens if that fiber cut happens and that 0/0 is no longer advertised up to your virtual network? Well, now your machines up there are free to talk to CNN.com or Pirate Bay or whatever else that it's going to talk to that you probably don't want it to talk to if you've had forced tunneling in place. So I coined this the fail-safe. Marketing will probably come up with something different when we actually get it published. But basically, how do you protect that server from talking to the internet if that 0/0 route is withdrawn? Do a time check. And basically, we can use layered NSG routes. So you'll notice that we've got some tags here on the NSG rules. And the virtual network tag is all of your VNet space and all of your local network, basically your on-prem network. And because you're advertising via BGP, that 0/0, Azure is seeing that as your local network, meaning every address in the IPv4 space is a part of your local network. So when you try to go to CNN.com, it's going to hit this rule and say, oh, that's part of your local network, right? Because it's in the 0/0 space. And it's going to allow it, based on this rule, back down to on-prem, because forced tunneling is sending everything down to on-prem. Now, if for some reason that 0/0 is withdrawn, then it's going to not apply to that first 100 level rule, and it's going to go to the next rule, which is a deny rule that says anything bound for the internet, kill. All right, so now you've effectively turned off the ability for that VM to talk to the internet if that 0/0 route is gone. Now, if for some reason you still needed to connect to that VM, you could actually add an allow RDP in or whatever port in. And as long as BGP is off or that 0/0 isn't flowing or advertised, you'd be able to RDP to this box for whatever reason. But as soon as that 0/0 was back in, this route would, or that traffic would no longer be allowed. So not something you'd necessarily recommend. Also, I put a lot of any rules on this. These rules, I don't recommend that either. Be a little more specific, but I was in a hurry to make the slide. So the layered, just to clarify, layered NSGs to do that fail-safe for forced tunneling. The last thing I want to talk about, Alex basically talked about it, and Jason's going to, and that's about Azure was really good for workloads, right? So we put up these workloads and everything's good. But as we migrate more and more stuff, I get more and more workloads up there. I get more and more duplication. I need to be more efficient. I need to do more cost savings, consolidation. Also, I'm migrating from kind of traditional monolithic IT to maybe DevOps, but I probably still have maybe a centralized security team. How do I make everybody happy in this world? And that's kind of where we start to look at what are the things that are common and start to look at this holistically. How do I create a virtual data center? And also, you know, if I've got this person over here on the right-hand side that they just decided to throw everything on the internet and didn't even put firewalls into place, and now I'm leaking corporate data out to the internet, how do I get those guys under control? That's where that holistic thinking comes into play. And VNet peering is really the key that is, allows us to unlock a real virtual data center now. And again, you'll start to hear these themes from both of the external customers coming that have talked today, that centralizing things is really an advantage for your deployments in Azure. Instead of treating them like multiple workloads, treat them as a holistic environment. You can consolidate. You can also do RBAC. So with your security, you could put your DMZ in that top hub VNet. And this could be in different resource groups, different subscriptions, all in the, you just however you need to architect it out. If we use the different subscriptions, I can have all my DevOps groups on the bottom with full control of their subscription. But if they want to get out to the internet, or if they want to use ExpressRoute and get back to my on-premise, they have to come through this hub. So it's an easy control point that I can give my security team or my network team access to that hub network, and they can lock that down and manage policy, consolidate resources, and then each DevOps team has complete control over their subscriptions, because I know that the network layer is locked down at the hub, and the spoke is allowed to innovate and do whatever they need to do as fast as they need to do. So it's a good way to kind of bridge your central IT world and your DevOps world. So I think that's all the points on my slide here. So yeah, so RBAC and consolidation are some really important advantages. VNet peering unlocks this. Also, the Ultra Performance Gateway is also a big enabler of this, because it allows a much bigger hub to talk back to your on-premise. So in the interest of time, I think I will turn it over to Jason, who will tell you about Manulife's journey.
Check one. John, thank you for that. That was fantastic, enlightening. One question here. Who got to ride the tricycles last night? Anybody? I saw it when I was leaving, and I was very jealous. So Manulife is a financial services company, a relatively large one. We have 34,000 people globally, 63,000 agents, and a very dispersed infrastructure from network and IT standpoint. So we operate in the top three economies in the U.S., in Japan, in China, and Canada, because, well, I'm Canadian, and that matters too. We are multi-global, that's right. I also can't count to three, right? So one of the things that's been a key driver for all of our discussions, all of our decisions, all of our approaches with Azure are these four tenets. And there's more, but these are the key ones that I like to focus on. The first one is minimizing how much infrastructure we use that is there to support services that don't add business value, following what Alex was saying. And this is sort of the foundational piece to why we consolidate things, to why we share things, why we don't duplicate things. It just takes away from the value that we can give our users. Then the second tenet is important, because if we can't leverage some of the cloud characteristics, then moving workloads there become a hard sell. It reduces the argument to move to the cloud. So we need to look at modifying, which is small changes to take advantage of a cloud characteristics, or modernize applications and workloads so we can move forward. And this really works for on-demand resources of legacy workloads that before a lot of users were time-boxed, or they were boxed to a certain set of cores in our actuarial sciences areas. This was key. They had 500 cores. And moving to Azure allowed us to go, all right, that cap of 500 cores is now a soft cap. So during quarter end, year end, they're able to boost to 10,000 cores and cut their time by, I think it was, an eighth. So this allows us to deliver financial reports more quickly. It allows us to waste less resources on actuaries. It allows us to actually drive direct business value. It compresses our costs, but it doesn't necessarily increase our costs. So the third characteristic and tenet that we've sort of focused on is we need to be forward-thinking when it comes to disaster recovery. And so we were very intentional about deploying connectivity, virtual networks, and resources in pairs. So we deploy virtual networks in disaster recovery pairs. Those align with what Microsoft uses for their geo-redundant storage. So we've done US East to US West, for example, is one of the pairs that Microsoft suggests. And we duplicate that as we go across the globe. And then finally, applications that can't be distributed, it's something that really needs to be looked at and say, can we find a way to make these resources always on to meet RPOs and RTOs? Because if we can't distribute it, then we have to look at alternatives or negotiate with businesses to say, is an extended RPO or RTO okay? So these sort of interplay with every decision that we've made going into the cloud, and they take us through the journey, which is what I'm going to do right now. And I'm going to focus on some of the key lessons learned because we only have a little bit of time left, and then I want to get into some questions and some collaborative thinking that came out of our discussions with our networking teams and our co-speakers, and just say, hey, this is something that we came up with just this week to see how we can make this look, how we can improve our deployment, how we can make things more flexible, save costs, and more dynamic. So in 2013, we started. We started with a single VPN. It was easy. It was cheap. It was tied to a single virtual network. It allowed us to prove out the concept that we could deliver value to the business, but it didn't allow us to support their demand and taste as soon as they got it. So it allowed us to build out that actuarial science resources that we actually deployed, and then we were looking for what's the next step. So we said, you know what? We need to look at a way that we can scale this horizontally. We've got to be able to provide more regions and more networks and more subscriptions. And so we continued on to the next year. And this was early 2014, where we actually switched out virtual network, or the initial production VPN with ExpressRoute. And we implemented our first two pairs. So that switch out from VPN to ExpressRoute, it was a very involved process. It took about 45 minutes. At least from my side, the networking guys had to do something beforehand. Yeah. Well, so the actual outage was only about 30 minutes because you're waiting for the gateways to recreate. Because effectively you disconnect, destroy your gateway, recreate your gateway, ER connection. Very straightforward. So this allowed us to expand in the North America regions, and allowed us to provide full DR scenarios that were outside of regions. It allowed us to provide more flexible opportunities for other line of business applications which started knocking on our door. So in early 2015, we started realizing that, well, we're not really engaging our global business. We're not really providing this value to the global stage. So we implemented a VPN in Asia to get started as well, again with our actuarial workloads, where it was an easy sell. Because if you give an actuary a core, they're going to use that core, and they're going to use 10 more. And this is just something that was a continued value proposition for us, because we could get away from buying expensive hardware and have it on demand. So we also implemented a second ExpressRoute in North America, which gave us that DR capabilities. And one of the ways we approached it, instead of going with exchange providers, we went with an MPLS cloud. And so we gave up some of the more explicit manageability for this common mesh network that it provides before VNet pairing came into the picture. This also is when we started seeing duplication of resources, where we saw Active Directory servers going wild. And we started noting that, you know, if we don't take a strategic approach to this now, we're not going to be able to manage this ongoing cost, and it's going to reduce that value. So this is where that initial concept and build out of our core services sort of came to be. In mid-2015, and you notice timelines are compressing as we go along, and our sort of growth pattern starts very slow as we have VPN. As soon as we get ExpressRoute, it starts to curve up. And at this point, it's getting near vertical. So we extended ExpressRoutes to Asia. We had two ExpressRoutes there, two ExpressRoutes in North America. We extend our regions that we have. We build out a reasoning, a logic behind why are we actually creating subscriptions? Why are we creating VNets? And there are some good questions on this. Why have more than one? Well, when you have 34,000 employees and you have a distributed IT groups that manage different things, you have to look and say, this group manages it. We care about this type of connectivity. Those two things meet. And that's where we chose to make our demarcation for subscriptions. When we started seeing this grow out globally, we saw that we weren't treating it as a global entity. And that was the point when we actually said, how do we get these two distinct MPLS clouds to talk, and to talk freely, to talk openly, so we can share those resources, we can take as much value from both sides as possible. And the businesses that were coming to us with solutions that were truly global in nature, they were saying, okay, we want to host something here, and this user over in Malaysia needs to talk to it. And we're like, okay. We said, okay, we can do this, we can do this. Let's circle back. We're going to implement ExpressRoute Premium and do a cross-connect. And that functioned. That gave us the immediate need. It gave us the ability to have traffic route over Azure. It gave us the opportunity to start seeing the bigger picture, the end state of where we were going. What it didn't give us, because we were using MPLS clouds that sort of abstracted some of the routing that Sean was talking about, it caused the routes to be very confusing, and it caused it very hard to determine explicitly where things traveled. So we were getting some strange routing patterns globally. So this is when we decided, you know, we really need to start merging these two MPLS clouds into one single one globally. And so early 2016, so it was late 2015, where we set out and said, we're going to merge these two clouds. And we have effectively taken two distinct networks and merged them. And this was over a two-hour period. We swapped out 25 networks in parallel to ExpressRoute globally. So again, same thing. Each network, you disconnect, destroy gateway, recreate gateway, reconnect. And in this scenario, because you're going ExpressRoute to ExpressRoute, it's even easier. We actually connected the new one, disconnected the old one, which we found out later caused some problems. But it allowed us to do this rapidly so that under a normal change window, we could re-architect the entire connectivity globally in Azure. It gives us that flexibility, this sort of capability to change things this rapidly without having massive outages of data centers that moved or connections that are going to take weeks to get in place. It gave us this ability to move at a speed that no one ever thought was possible. So as we started building this out further and further, this grew based on use cases, based on applications and solutions that came. And it sort of grew as a natural entity. So this is where we ended up, very conceptual nature. We have our MPLS cloud, which has physical connections that are more than what our logical express routes are. And these drop in data centers and offices and locations where we need connectivity near and dear. We were able to fix routing so that if you're sitting close to one of these, you route to the nearest one, and you route up into Azure across wherever you need to go. We implemented a logical core shared environment and started to build out this data center concept before the technology was there to support it. And then we have regional VNet pairs to support our DR scenarios. And we started only in production with VNet pairs. And we decided, you know what, this is needed for development as well, where we can allow software to be developed in the context of multiple regions and moving more and more towards cloud-native technologies, which is where our next sort of experience is going. So our results. So again, responsive networking. We can focus on the solution. We don't have to focus on how do we get connectivity to it. We're able to minimize supporting infrastructure. Supporting infrastructure and supporting resources. So our teams are still very lean. We operate 2,000 virtual machines now at scale, and we operate that with about 10 people globally. And that's not just for network, that's for all of Azure services. So our future, so we're gonna continue to expand. We have 10 global regions right now we're in. We're gonna get more, because our business demands that flexibility to be close to their customers, close to where they interact with, and the ability to route that dynamically so that they can support cloud-native applications that will dynamically heal themselves as things go wrong. We're gonna extend centralized security zones in what we've coined as global control zones, and this is an extension of the core services model and something that's been talked about already. And we're going to leverage even more high-performance networks, and this is one that's exciting for actuaries because 1 millisecond latency is a big deal in that world for some reason. I don't know why. But we're going to be looking at accelerated networking starting in this next few months, actually hopefully sooner, Ryan's going to hook me up. And we're going to get our actuarial farms running at a scale and speed that they've never done on-premise ever in the world. And that's, I would take a guess that would be for the entire application in every single country and every single company. So it's going to be a first for this application. And so this is just the basics that is the future. So I append it to these slides because I've done some of this already and just not an in-depth sort of where we learned from it. And we started looking at a more bigger picture of where we came from, where we are now, and where we're going based on conversations we had over this week and sort of input from multiple minds. And because we're using MPLS, or you could replace that with an Ethernet backbone, this is what it sort of looks like. So the top virtual networks are the regional pairs. They're the solution-based virtual networks, where you have a solution that's substantially sufficient size that justifies its own virtual network. There are the DevOps networks, where you need to segregate and give delegated rights. Then you've got your core services, which at this point is really just a logical bound. It's not a gateway for all of the networks, and it's just where we consolidate cost-saving resources. And then you've got all of our express routes that connect throughout that and are backed by that MPLS cloud. So what does this look like in with some of these new features that are coming? Where are we going? Where is it going to be? And I think from a global scope, so each of these core services boxes is a different region, and this could be 34 if you want to go to the full extent, is it looks like this. So, and let me just go back one. So this might look relatively clean, but I've simplified it drastically. Take those boxes at the top and multiply them by four. Look at the connections. And it gets a little bit to manage, and that's where we're now. And when you start looking into not using an MPLS cloud and you start doing cross connects, you start multiplying out the number of connections. So it's 50 times 50 is a lot of numbers because I'm not good at math. So it just gets unbearably complex to manage. And this is the how we continue to maintain lean teams if we make simplicity and consistency. And so this is a model that allows us to do that. I think this is one that will likely be implemented in this year. I'll be going back and working on that proposal and the timelines for it. But let me walk you through this. So we still have an MPLS cloud. This could easily be replaced with an Ethernet backbone. And you get some more flexibility with that because you can do cross connects and have everything right through Azure in that manner. You have all of your core services and security services and central hub virtual networks. And those hub virtual networks can give you internet connectivity, both internal and outbound, and control that in a reasonable fashion that's, well, manageable, which is the big thing. This also could support API gateways for your cloud-native applications on a global scale. You could have traffic managers terminating in these as well. And then you have your spoke networks, which are all of the different networks that you build for other logical reasons, let that be business units or application specifics or delegation. Any of these scenarios where as you get further into Azure and you start with that first ideological view of one network, sorry, Narayan, once you get to a size, it's just not supportable. And so you start building it out so you can give people control and you release the control. And this is the thing, is you enable people, instead of being the gatekeeper, you become a guardrail. So that's what the top networks are. And all the green lines are that VNet peering. It also, and this is one thing with John, I'm gonna have to ask you, is between the VNets with VNet peering that are both connected to the hub, can they talk directly? So they can talk directly. So you even get side benefits there. We'll talk. Okay. So I think I'll probably add another line, but we'll talk. So this is Q&A. So on the bottom, you see the little orange virtual networks off to the side here? These are critical networks where they have an uplink directly from the express route and a peer to the core for anything that's used. And so this would be workloads that are critical to businesses where you don't want to have any other sort of dependency in the line, like that gateway or hub network. So here we go. This is the end of our presentations. We're going to be here for questions. Feel free to come up. And all four of us are going to be up here. Feel free to come and attack us. Thank you guys very much. I appreciate it.